Former Vice President Al Gore addressed the Senate Foreign Relations Committee on Wednesday to strongly urge congressional action on global warming this year, ahead of an international conference in Copenhagen, Denmark, later this year in December. Gore warned that we have arrived at a moment of decision. Indeed, a new report on global warming concluded that its effects are, in a sense, irreversible. The study, published by the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, states that even if all carbon dioxide emissions were to cease today, the climate would still feel the effects of what has already been done for the next 1,000 years. Susan Solomon, the lead author of the report, noted that such a finding only makes things current action all the more imperative. The Obama administration, in seeking to break with the stalling policies of former President Bush, wants the U.S. to become proactive on global warming ahead of the Copenhagen conference. International participants will be hoping to outline a new treaty to follow the Kyoto protocols that the U.S. under Bush previously failed to ratify. With us to talk about this on the phone is Liz Pereira, who is the Washington representative for Union of Concerned Scientists Climate Program. Welcome, Liz.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. So, Liz, let's start with talking about the last 8 years, and given the inaction and a denial of the last 8 years, how urgent of a situation are we in now?
We are really in an extremely urgent situation right now. We have really a historic opportunity in front of us. We have been experiencing the failed Bush administration policies for the last 8 years, and even though he had promised to do something on climate change, he did not follow through on that. And now more than ever, you know, the world is waiting for the United States to lead and to move forward with a comprehensive global piece of global warming legislation as we go into Copenhagen in December.
So earlier this week, Obama's Secretary of State Hillary Clinton named Todd Stern as a special envoy for climate change. So, as representatives of the Union for Concerned Scientists, how do you feel about this appointment?
We feel that it is a great move forward, and we're happy to see that there is such a position as special envoy on climate. It really does recognize the priority that the president is putting on this issue at the time, so we're very happy to see it.
Mm-hmm. We've been seeing quite a few in communities and on a global level. There have been quite a few green initiatives that we've been seeing coming up. But one of the key or the most critical factors, at least starting last year, and an ongoing issue is the failing economy all around the world. So how do you see the initiatives being impacted by the failing economy?
Well, you know, first let's look at, you know, the cost of doing nothing on climate change. We have to actually look at what that would do to our economy. And honestly, the cost would be in the trillions. The Stern report, which was done for the UK government, found that global gross domestic product would drop from 5 to 20% below expected growth if we do nothing on climate change. And when we look at the cost of fighting global warming, most economists agree that our economy will continue to grow and the cost of taking action will be a slightly slower rate of growth. So really, compared to doing nothing, you know, we're actually going to be saving ourselves money in the long run. And actually a lot of the things that you saw the president pushing in his stimulus package, these great solutions that many Americans want to see to really repower, refuel, and rebuild America are, you know, just the things that we need right now to stimulate our economy and get our economy moving.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then how do you see some of the other economies like India and China responding to the initiatives? They've been not really stand alone, but, you know, their issues that while the West historically has been able to pollute the world as far as their own industrial progress is concerned, but now the other countries of the global south or other economies as they're emerging, all of a sudden there's this sort of proselytizing that's taking place. So how do you see that playing out in the next few years?
Well, you know, I think this is why it's so important for the United States to lead on this issue, because we really are the main country at fault. We have the largest CO2 emissions per capita of any country in the world, and it's our, you know, we actually have at our fingertips right now some of the best green technology and clean energy technology. You know, concentrated solar power in the Southwest. We have a lot of solutions, and you know, it's really up to us to actually help bring the rest of the world along with those solutions, and you know, hopefully get our green technology adopted in these countries. And these countries really do have a great opportunity to do that, because they can leapfrog some of the dirtier technologies that we adopted, and they can go straight to the clean technologies, just kind of how they leapfrogged, you know, the regular phone lines that we all have going to our houses. They went straight to cell phones, so you didn't have to create the infrastructure for phone lines. So, you know, we really see that it's our job as the United States to lead and to help these countries come along. And we really can't expect them to do that unless we take the lead.
Mm-hmm. Liz, from your point of view, I mean, there's a lot of I guess, given the state of the denial and the constant assault on this notion of global warming as just a fabricated story, and particularly from the right-wing media, and particularly what we would call the hate media, where there is this sense that, well, it may not be that bad, but then looking at this, at the new report that concluded that, in a sense, the effects may be irreversible. I mean, what sort of? I mean, that's a pretty dire statement to make.
Yes, that's right. And you know, the reality is, you know, the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which, you know, has been working for the past 30 years to convene the world's top 3,000 climate scientists. You know, they just recently won a Nobel Prize collectively for their work. They've come up with, you know, such a strong consensus that, you know, burning fossil fuels like oil in our cars and coal in power plants releases carbon dioxide and other pollution that forms a heat trapping blanket around the Earth, and you know that this pollution can remain in the atmosphere for centuries, and you know, become this thickening blanket that further warms the planet. You know, this new finding that carbon dioxide can stay in the atmosphere for up to 1,000 years should not be a reason for us to kind of, you know, just say, well, it's too late, we can't do anything now. I mean, it actually means it's even more dire that we actually start making these emission cuts right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the individuals and that are still kind of spouting the denier, you know, information out there, which are, they're very few and far between. Many of them are industry funded. They, you know, honestly are just, they're just pushing delay because it benefits certain economic interests. And, you know, delay really isn't an option. And I think most of us are in agreement on that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right now, I just want to remind our listeners that we're speaking with Liz Pereira, who is the Washington representative for Union of Concerned Scientists Climate Program. Liz, there are some other elements that the former Vice President Al Gore raised to have a successful agreement in Copenhagen, and you talked about the issues of carbon dioxide and other warming pollutants. Then he went ahead and talked about the issue of deforestation, which alone accounts for 20% of the emissions that cause global warming. Along with that, you know, we are constantly reminded about the impact of global warming when you see large chunks of Arctic ice shelves just kind of breaking apart. So do you feel that there is enough courage and a willingness on the part of this current administration? I mean, obviously, this is something we'll have to wait and see. But what are some of the early signs from your vantage point and from the representatives or for the Union of Concerned Scientists like?
Well, and I, you know, so far this administration has, you know, they campaigned on the issue. The president actually did say in his campaign that he wanted to reduce emissions 80% by 2050, and he, you know, he supports, you know, a very well designed cap and trade program to implement this. You know, he's shown that he really prioritizes this issue by putting people in place like Carol Browner, who will, you know, be the energy environment czar, they're calling her. And so he has really shown that he is making this a priority. And You know, as you watch the operations of the stimulus go forward, you know, he has continued to stick by his commitments to, you know, really feed the clean energy economy and move America, you know, beyond our dependence on oil and put Americans back to work and to cut global warming pollution. So far we've seen, you know, very positive signs from his administration.
You know, recently we saw oil prices reaching record high and gas prices reaching record high, and there was a moment in time where just because of the affordability factors, people were beginning to drive less. They were beginning to look at buses and other alternative means of transportation. And now we see gas prices going down again. How do we engage our larger communities in a broad-based sort of community awareness raising programs and disseminating, you know, just the benefits of less driving and less use of energy? I mean, we always look at enforcement, we always look at compliance issues, we always look at the verification regime, but ultimately, you know, it's really the people, the communities that have to take charge. And is there, are there enough programs in place that can really raise awareness within our communities?
I think that's a great question, and, you know, especially as our listening audience is potentially in their car listening to this, but, you know, they need choices. They don't need to, you know, most Americans, they don't want to be lectured at, don't tell me that I have to get out of my car, you know, because they need their car. They need to do what they need to do on their day-to-day basis, get their kids to school. But they really need the choices. They need a convenient, you know, mass transit system. They need smart growth communities that are designed to, you know, put convenience stores in walking distance from their houses so that they don't have to get in their car. Most Americans would prefer not to have to if they could. And so we really do, I mean, this takes a lot of comprehensive policy to do this. In the stimulus bill, there was increased funding for mass transit and, you know, and not as much for roads as we had seen, although, you know, in general, we need to actually focus more on those mass transit choices and smart growth over those traditional just road expansion projects, in order to really give people the choices to move to basically get around a little more greener. And hopefully, you know, under a cap and trade system at the federal level, we will have quite a few revenues generated from the sale of allowances. And we will be able to put that money into great things like mass transit and rail and bike lanes, and so that we can actually give Americans this choice.
Well, I thank you so much, Liz Pereira. I thank you for sharing your thoughts. I think we can only hope that as a joint effort where our communities take action, and just for the future of our generations and for the future of the planet. So once again, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much.